Welcome to the Mitch Hanks Show, originating four blocks from Wisconsin's capital. Mitch is the radio voice of uncommon sense. All sides of an argument are welcome here. Just be prepared to make one, as Mitch argues for truth, not victory. Politics, lifestyle, pop culture are all on the table. So get ready to participate on the Mitch Hanks Show.
And at long last, we now have pay dirt struck. Roger Stone, friend of Donald Trump, renowned author, The Clintons' War on Women, The Case, the Man Who Killed Kennedy, The Case Against LBJ, The Bush Crime Family. Roger Stone joins us now, and we moved our 9 o'clock, or dang 30 guests up a little higher, and now Roger Stone comes to the bottom of the hour. We also have Gilad Altzman still in the studio. Hello, Mr. Stone.
Mitch, my humblest apologies. We've moved our facilities both in New York and in Florida, so we're in catch-up mode, but I'm delighted to finally be back with you again.
Well, it's great to have you on the show. Say hello to Gilad Altzman. He's still in studio. He's kind of a, sort of like you, he's a maverick, goes against the grain, and is no longer really welcome in Israel, much for his outspoken speeches.
Hello, Roger.
Gilad, I like what I hear then. I like what I
hear. Not a guy that is influenced by political correctness, put it that way. Anyway, so we have our president, your friend, in the news again this morning on the various interviews. Kim Jong-un, he's a smart cookie. I'd be honored to meet with him. The Andrew Jackson comments he would have perhaps worked something out to prevent the Civil War. And the other one is his confrontation with John Dickerson on the surveillance or the wiretapping. How do you react to the latest obsession in the 24-hour news cycle about those utterances by the president?
Well, Donald Trump is nothing if not unique. And as I think I predicted on this show many times, he'll never be boring. He's a unique and idiosyncratic figure. What interests me really is this poll 2 days ago that showed that 96% of the people in a Washington Post ABC poll who voted for him said they would do so again, whereas those who said they voted for Hillary Clinton had dropped back to about 83. Still significant, but what it demonstrates, of course, is that despite all this focus, if the election were held again tomorrow, the result would be the same.
Which is amazing. But now, you ever decided to pick up the phone and say, Donald, Andrew Jackson died in 1845, 16 years before the Civil War began, so he wouldn't have really said he was disappointed about what was going on. I mean, I know he's probably not a stickler for dates. Is that what is going on there?
I'm trying to figure out why we're talking about this.
Well, you're right.
It's kind of hard to figure out the context. Look, I recognize that in the case of Jackson, the media at the time, newspapers, said that he was crude, uncouth, uneducated, a madman, a wild man, a lunatic, and so on. He was a very successful president. So I understand that concept. By the way, Theodore Roosevelt, a lightweight, a self-promoter, an egomaniac.
Mm-hmm.
And so on. So it's very hard to judge any of these presidents, Barack Obama, Bill Clinton included, you know, within the realm of their own times. In all fairness, all get seen in retrospect, and our views of them change. The Trump presidency, we're 100 days in. I'm not sure who came up with the 100-day measurement. While you can take many actions in 100 days, you know, whether you feel the impact of any of those actions is a solely different question.
Yeah.
You know, I bet you know me. I'm a Trump man, no question.
Oh, no,
about
I know
it.
That. And
But when he's wrong, I'll say so. And when he's, and I'll try to kind of push him in the right direction. And when he's right, sure, I'll stand by him, no question about it.
And I guess the question was because of the media, you know, hyperbolic reaction to these types of quotes. And is it the case that his 96% of his voters don't care, he doesn't care, or, you know, does he want to be loved by those elite media people that criticize him around the clock, or what's your analysis of that?
Well, I do think he has always had the desire to be liked. He can be as mad at the media as he wants, but let's face it, the media made Donald Trump. before he was president, he was the best known real estate executive on the face of the planet. You know, as I used to kid to him, you know, what's Zeckendorf doing this week? How are the Lefracs? Go to Madison. Most people don't know who those folks are.
Yeah.
But those are his contemporaries. Those are his competitors in Manhattan real estate. Yet only Trump is a worldwide known brand name. He is not your homogenized, by the book, cleaned up for PR president who only puts forward this kind of phony facade. We know incredible things about our former presidents that were not known in contemporary times. John Kennedy, you know, bedded 18-year-old Mary Beardsley, who's written a terrific book about it, who actually met last summer. That's something the White House personnel office was not putting out. It wasn't part of the facade of the romanticism of Camelot and so on.
A different kind of romanticism on that, apparently. But
I guess the point I'm making is all of our presidents have had these odd foibles. The difference is that we hid them better in the past, perhaps.
Well, that's right. And I think, unlike Bill Clinton, he avoided women with too much makeup who looked like his mother. But that's a different story. Just a taste
exactly
issue.
Right. No accounting for taste.
Yes, I yield to our guest here with a question. Gilad Altman for Roger Stone. You want to ask him a question?
Yeah, I would. I would like to, you know, because it seems that as if you understand Trump better than anyone I can think of. How this promise for America First lives together with the recent attack on Syria, for instance? What do you reckon?
Well, I must tell you that I was scheduled to be on Meet the Press the day after the surgical attack on the Syrian airbase, and I canceled because I needed a day to figure out what I really thought. In a certain sense, Donald Trump ran as an anti-interventionist, somebody who would not, like his predecessors, the Bushes, the Clintons, lead us off to foreign wars that didn't seem to have our inherent national interest at the forefront of their purpose. And I also can tell you firsthand that in the immediate aftermath of the Syrian strike, the president's advisors, McMaster General Mattis, and almost to a man and woman, recommended the immediate sending of 150,000 ground troops to Syria. And it was only Trump alone who resisted that advice. I feared for about a 24-hour period that he would take that advice, but he kind of defaulted to his core position that we don't have an inherent interest there in the long term, and we certainly shouldn't be utilizing ground troops. So from the geopolitical point of view of the message that the Syrian strike sent the North Koreans, sent the Iranians, sent the Chinese, I can see why it was irresistible. Will it change the outcome of what ultimately happens in Syria and whether Assad stays or goes? I doubt it.
So it was basically kind of a firework.
Exactly. I think it was symbolic. I think it was to send a message.
I see. Okay.
Did Assad in fact use chemical weapons on his people? I find it hard to believe. Not in his interest.
I'm with you there. And your interpretation was very similar to mine. I also came to the conclusion that it was a firework, a warning. You know, America is still powerful. We can maybe even more warning for Korea and China, but it wasn't. It wasn't a serious political operation, a military operation.
Yes, I think you're right. What makes no sense to me is Assad having told the world and signed an agreement with the UN, guaranteed by the Russians, his patrons, that he had no chemical weapons, to now show up and use them would badly embarrass his Russian patrons, who he needs for survival.
Makes no sense
whatsoever. None whatsoever. People don't do things in politics or in life that are illogical and against their own best interests. It just doesn't happen by and large.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me in the escalation arguments by General Wheeler and General Taylor and General LeMay to JFK after 61 and 63. I mean, he kept the Vietnamese Occupation Limited, LBJ, put in 200,000 troops in July of 65. Kind of a similar pushback, it seems to me, after the Bay of Pigs fiasco.
Very, very similar, I think. Look, I think the agency was trying to mislead President Kennedy, just as the agency today is trying to mislead President Trump. When I see CIA Director Pompeo come out and say Julian Assange is a Russian asset, no, Mr. Director, he is not. Prove it. Show us your proof. I don't want your assessments. Assessment is a code word in Washington for we're guessing. It's a code word for we don't know. Their assessments are almost always wrong, just like their assessment that Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction, or their assessment that we were not using third-party rendition to send terrorists to countries that do use treason, or their assessment that the attack on our mission in Benghazi was caused by, done by an unruly mob and caused by an anti-Islamic video shown in Turkey. So the vaunted intelligence agencies, all 17 of them, headed by political appointees, have a long track record of just being wrong. If we start indicting journalists, if we start demanding that journalists expose their sources, that's a slippery slope. That's the end of the First Amendment and the end of a first press. Who's next? The New York Times? The Washington Post? Yeah. The paper there in Madison? This is a terrible precedent.
Well,
Assange is not a Russian asset. I'm tired of arguing this. They can't prove he is. Mm-hmm. They just keep saying, it's our assessment. Well, that's the tip off that they don't know.
Right, because all we hear is that they say this. We've seen no evidence. They've given us no physical evidence of the hack.
Exactly.
We're supposed to believe them. Of course, we didn't believe them on the weapons of mass destruction on the left. And as you said, a litany of examples where they were wrong. But it's worth the wait having you. We'll come back. And I just want to ask you about the battles with the president, with health care and with tax reform and even infrastructure. And if you don't put a victory on the board, what problems that could create. Roger Stone. There's only one Roger Stone. Thank God for that. Also, Gilad Altman is still with us in studio. Quite a speaker of his own right with questions. We'll come back on the Mitch Hanks Show at MadisonTalks.com. And we're back live on MadisonTalks.com, also Facebook Live. Roger Stone is on the phone, friend of Trump, author of many best-selling books. By the way, they're going to maybe release a few thousand more documents on JFK, Roger Stone. It says that the president can decide that. I hope he says yes, by the way. I don't even have any inside track on that score.
Yeah, I am working on that, Mitch, something I'm very, very concerned about. As you know, President Barack Obama had the opportunity to release documents on the Bay of Pigs that the Congress had set for release last year, subject only to the final approval of the president, and to my surprise, the president nixed it, and those documents go back into a black hole for another 25 years. I am hoping that the boys over in Langley will not be able to convince the president to kick back these JFK documents. We need full disclosure. It's time for the people to know what the agency was doing during the Kennedy assassination.
Well, the History Channel recently doing some shows on Oswald's alleged trip to Mexico City for 6 days in September, but a lot of people think it was somebody other than Oswald. I'm not sure how you stand on that front.
Well, here's what I think. Lee Harvey Oswald did not shoot John Kennedy, and nor did he act alone. There was a conspiracy involving others. My book, The Man Who Killed Kennedy, The Case Against LBJ, makes a pretty good case that Johnson, the intelligence agencies, the Big Texas Oil, and of course the mob, were all involved in the Kennedy assassination. I stand by my account. I frankly think my account will only be strengthened if these documents are released and we can do some more research.
Do you think Oswald was in Mexico City, or was it somebody else?
I think someone else was sent down there. There are examples of this elsewhere. Someone went around to the various private airfields in Dallas on the days before the Kennedy assassination, identifying themselves as Oswald, seeking to charter a plane, yet photographs shown to those individual operators said the man they spoke to did not look like the picture of Oswald they were shown.
And you believe that Rafael Cruz was in New Orleans passing out pamphlets with Oswald?
No question whatsoever. If you go to my book, The Making of the President 2016, there's an entire chapter there on Ted Cruz and his incredibly shady father, Rafael Cruz. They complain all they want, but that photo comes from the Warren Commission, and it is most definitely Rafael Cruz.
And there's film, too. It isn't just photos, because you'd be photoshopped. There are two different films of him passing out the leaflets, which were pro-Castro leaflets, and of course the purpose was to surveil the people who followed up on that. But anyway, getting back to the...
Mitch, here's the key point. How do you know Ted Cruz is lying? His lips are moving.
Yeah, and he giggles after the applause lines. I can never figure that out. Anyway, on the tax reform and all the other stuff, the president can't just bat zero. I mean, he's going to have to get a base hit, don't you think?
No question about it. And I have been very forthright in saying I think that the question of health care was bungled very badly. In this particular case, I believe the bill the president put forward was actually drafted by John Boehner, the former speaker, now a lobbyist for the healthcare industry, passed from him to Paul Ryan, passed from Ryan to White House Chief of Staff Reince Priebus, some Wisconsin boys here.
Yes.
And then passed from Priebus to the president. It was not a good bill. I agree with Newt Gingrich. The president could have done much better. But rather than crying about spilt milk, rather than focusing on what we've done wrong, let's try again. Meaning, I don't think the president ever suffers among his own supporters, among his governing coalition, when he tries and fails. He only suffers when he stops trying. We can do better. This was not a great bill. Had I been in the House, I probably would have voted against it myself, because I know we can do better. But we must try. I'm also, Mitch, have to be honest with you, I never thought that Obamacare was our single most important, pardon me, we're here at Stone's Dog Farm.
Is that a Checkers offspring? I'm just curious.
That is Checkers. Oh. Checkers, the fifth. I always thought tax reform and revitalizing the economy was a higher both public policy goal and political goal, and that's where they should have started. I can tell you that a number of the president's outside advisors have clearly now convinced him of that. That's why a week ago, the White House staff seemed shocked when the president announced that he was going to move ahead with tax reform. Yes, he has to win on this issue, and I think his proposal, which right now is, you know, an outline, but it really needs to mimic that which he put forward in the campaign. A cut in the corporate tax rate below that of the rate of Mexico or China or Japan, for that matter, will cause an incredible economic boom in this country when suddenly, overnight, it becomes cheaper and more efficient and more profitable to do business in the United States. And a number of these corporations will do so. Yes, we need an across-the-board John F. Kennedy, Ronald Reagan-style tax cut for all Americans. That has to be part of the mix. We also ought to implement the president's program for inversion to bring trillions of dollars back onshore for fair taxation. But that, I think, is the cornerstone to Trump's success. If he can do that and do that successfully, it will buy him the time for some of these other domestic issues politically. It will increase his revenues to deal with some of these other issues. I think it's actually the cornerstone to a successful first term as president.
Because the biggest cornerstone since 86 Reagan tax reform. Final question from Gilad Altman, if you want. Gilad.
I'm actually fascinated by the idea that the only people who happen to think rationally, to use their brain in this country at the moment, happen to be within the conservative constituency, and this is something that I wouldn't expect to see 5 or 10 years ago, but this is clearly the case now, and it is reassuring for me that we are moving forward towards reinstating the idea of national state, thinking patriotically, thinking about us first. So I don't have a question. It was just a statement, really.
Okay, well, there you got a fan in Gilad, Roger. So there you have it. Of course, you were always a kid on the right, weren't you, Roger? You're never really one of those kids that went from meandering on the left to moving to the right later in life. I mean,
but I had a similar odyssey. I start on the right as kind of your conventional conservative Republican, but over time, I admit that I have taken on some more libertarian views, which are not inconsistent with being a conservative. We don't like government. We don't like government telling us what we can do. Don't like government telling us what we can eat or what we can smoke or who we can love or who we can marry or who we can live with. We want the government out of our lives. That, to me, is kind of your fundamental precept of conservatism. And I would tell you, I'm very disturbed by the saber rattling by the Attorney General and by the Homeland Security Secretary over enforcing the federal law against marijuana in the 36 states where the states have chosen to legalize marijuana for either medicinal or, in some cases, recreational use. The Trump administration can't be for states' rights when it comes to transgendered bathrooms, and for states' rights when it comes to abortion, and states' rights when it comes to medicinal marijuana, and they suddenly say, but we're not for states' rights when it comes to recreational marijuana. That's insanity. And then having the Homeland Secretary say last week, Mitch, this is almost like a throwback. Marijuana is a gateway drug. Sorry, Mr. Secretary. No, it isn't. And no one in their right mind thinks that in 2017. No one.
You need help from John Kasich, who was apparently smoking pot back in 76 in the Reagan campaign. I mean, or Jeb Bush. I mean.
Yeah, I mean, look, this is not what people voted for. Donald Trump told us in the campaign when it came to marijuana, he believed in states' rights. I know a lot of younger voters, a lot of libertarian voters, a lot of non-conservative but reform-oriented voters voted for him on the basis of that insurance. And now having Jeff Sessions or Secretary Kelly suddenly say, oh, no, we're going to reverse ourselves on that. We're going to conduct a new federal war on marijuana. Well, that's when you'll start to lose Roger Stone, I can tell you that.
I think Jeff Sessions could probably do a couple of tokes, in my mind. It would probably help him out a little bit. Otherwise, he's going to have a mint julep with his buddies down.
Look, he's a product of the South, and I think he has no cultural, you know, experience or even probably never brushed upon marijuana in his everyday life, so he has no idea what he's talking about.
Yeah.
And to his credit, by the way, yesterday he said that he was shocked by the negative reaction to his remarks. I actually think the man may be reconsidering, which would be a very positive thing.
Yeah, or you could slip him some brownies, maybe. I don't know how that would work. Anyway.
Or maybe I can get him to hit my Nixon bong sometime. That would be
Roger Stone, Nixon, God knows he'd love to smoke pot, I'm sure. Yeah, he was.
Oh, he loved that Acapulco gold.
He was right in there with Timothy Leary, probably in the lawn of the White House.
The truth is Ted Agnew used to drink the bone water, but nobody talks about it.
Oh, well, that's our next show. Hey, Roger Stone, it's great that it was worth the wait. We thank you very much. The StoneColdTruth.com, at Roger Stone, the Twitter handle, Junior, I guess, at Roger Stone Junior. Thank you so much, Roger Stone. We appreciate it.
Great to be back with you, Mitch, and look forward to the next time.
Okay, take care.